You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Need to know what's happening? It's time to get in the huddle with Carl Dukes, Brian Baldinger, and Jason LaConforta.
Back for another edition of In the Huddle. Carl Dukes, put him up along with my man Jason LaConforta. Of course, Brian Baldinger, part of this podcast as well. Guys, like us, subscribe, tell your friends about us, and be here as we count down to the draft. Today, Jason and I are going to take a look at some of the teams' needs that we've been talking about leading up to the draft on April 27th, right? April 25th.
25th?
Yeah, 27th is, I think, the third day of the draft. There are 4 days of the draft, guys. But we're going to talk about some of the team needs. We're going to get into the top 10 quarterbacks as well, and maybe what will happen there, because I think four get taken in the first 15. I know, Jason, you've been writing about this in the Washington Post and talking about
more than that, brother. More than that.
Talking to a lot of people about it, so we will get into that. Before we do, though, let's start with team needs. And I want to start with the Miami Dolphins. Listen, they've made some moves here. The big question is, how much are they going to pay Tua Tagovailoa? We're not sure, but we think he's going to get his bag, and ultimately he'll be a $45 to $50 million quarterback. I don't think he gets more than Mahomes or, you know, Jalen Hurts or those guys. But draft needs. What are we talking about with the Miami Dolphins? And when you start talking about Tua, you got to talk about offensive line, right? They need to protect him, obviously, more, especially with this investment that they're about to have into him.
Yeah, I mean, look, you can look at their offseason, and they have gutted their defense. So, I mean, really, all three levels of the defense, you can make a case, right? Like, They kind of lost a little bit of their spine. You talk about losing somebody like Christian Wilkins. I think they're a little light at linebacker, especially with so many guys coming back from injury, season-ending injuries that happen in season, right? So those guys might not necessarily be back for the first quarter of the season. We know they thought they were going to have a dream team in their secondary a few years ago. Hasn't worked out, right? Xavier couldn't really stay on the field. Jalen Ramsey, not a spring chicken. I mean, and then you look at, you know, Armstead, you mentioned O-line. I'm totally with you. I mean, Armstead kind of going year to year now, like body breaking down a little bit. Where is he in terms of a 1 year, 2 year, 3 year plan? So you look at the strengths of the draft and with where they're picking. I mean, offensive line or corner, I think there's going to be a couple of them that are standing out to the Dolphins. Maybe there's enough of them there that their needs match up with the strength of this draft that maybe you could move back a little bit, get a little cute, get some more capital, and still get, you know, one of those guys, your left tackle of the future, your, you know, starting boundary corner of right bleeping now. So, if you're Anthony Weaver and you took over that defense and you look at what they had on paper, like when Baltimore faced Miami late in the year, when Weaver was still a part of the Ravens defensive staff, you look at Miami's roster going into that game where they had a bunch of injuries come down. At the start of that game to now, that defensive roster is, it's a shell of what it was. So I got to think he's banging the table like, hey, guys, I just got here. We've gutted things. We've lost a lot of guys. Can I get a little something in the first round? So, yeah, I can see it. I can see them addressing their secondary or their offensive line.
What about Bradley Chubb, right? Injured Phillips. They got edge rushers, but is that also something you think they might be thinking about here?
I mean, I they're going to know about the return of those guys and what kind of feedback they're getting from their medical team about what's realistic. How early in the year are they going to be ready to go? I have a hard time getting excited about these edge rushers. Like, you're going to talk yourself into some of them because there's none of them, you know, because there's really only three and a half, four who should really even be talked about. And in a good edge draft, those guys are in the second wave mostly and not even the first wave, you know? So, I mean, you could. I just think that a couple of them will already be gone. And they don't need a quarterback, right? So I'm going to say by the time they pick, maybe six quarterbacks have been taken, at least five, right? So they're not in that market. So, like, that drops some players to them. Like, they're going to be right in the thick of, I think, that run on offensive linemen and corners. And I think that, again, a lot of assumptions here. A lot of things have to happen between now and then. But I could just see it being a scenario where – There's somebody at one of those positions who they think is of a quality that we can't get later.
Let's talk about the Cincinnati Bengals. It's In the Huddle, guys. Subscribe, like us, watch us on YouTube, In the Huddle Pod, and tell your friends about us as we talk all things NFL. Jason Lock on for Carl Dukes. Baldy will be back with us, and we'll be talking more about the draft and breaking down some of these players as well. Jason, Cincinnati, obviously, they get Joe Burrow back. That's number one. The T. Higgins situation, are they thinking wide receiver early in this draft, or are you still going offensive line thinking about the future well-being of Joe Burrow?
I think it's a lot like Miami, man. I think, again, at that corridor of the draft, the defense slipped last year, and a lot of that slip was the secondary, right? They let their two safeties go in free agency. They tried to replace them with kids. It didn't really work. You know, Awuzie wasn't the same guy, coming back from injury. Now he's gone. They tried to address pass rush last year and lean into that maybe a year too soon. Or not too soon, but maybe a year before they absolutely had to, which I get when you look at, their edge rushers and where they are at this point in their career. So I think they feel like they minded that a little bit last year. I mean, Orlando Brown is a good tackle. Like, he's above average. But you look at the kind of deal they signed him to, it was kind of a bridge to somebody else, right? The Jonah Williams thing didn't work out. They've had difficulty identifying quality tackles in the draft. You look at the number of them here, and they might say there's too many of them for us to fail. I just think, again, the strength is going to match up with their need. So I think it's not going to be best player available for them, I don't think. Like, I don't think they have that luxury with the way the defense slipped. I think it's going to be the best. It's going to be the best DB or the best offensive lineman available. Maybe there's some other player that's just standing there screaming out to them, but I doubt it. I doubt it. You know, Joe Burrow hasn't played a full season pretty much ever, right? Like, again, Orlando Brown, can he roll with him for another year or two? You can. But I think in a perfect world, Orlando Brown is your right tackle. You know, they switched Jonah to right. Like, could you upgrade at left tackle, move Orlando to right tackle, and maybe really feel better about your O-line than you have in a long time?
By the way, the Dolphins pick 21st. The Bengals right there in that 18 range. We don't know if moves are made. And again, we're doing this on the assumption that nothing changes, although we know it will come draft night. All right. And by the way, you know, the Bengals, I'm with you on this as far as, you know, best player available, because at 18, you're in that kind of no man's land. You'll see what happens in the top 15, but I kind of agree with you there, Jace. Let's talk about the Rams, who were a surprise last year, right? I mean, what they were able to do with the personnel they had, it's kind of amazing to think, okay, this is a team that was supposed to be rebuilding. And instead, they look like they're a team that's on the come. Now, they lost the most dominant defensive player in the last decade. We know that. Aaron Donald calls it quits. But Raheem Morris leaves. He's now the Falcons head coach. He was, you know, the defensive coordinator, secondary guy. So you look at the Rams and you say, all right, Sean McVay, what is he going to do? Do you go out and address edge rusher? Because, listen, the kid Kobe Turner and Byron Young, those guys played well inside and for them on the defensive side of the football. Where do the Rams go in this draft? And they, again, are drafting 19 right after Cincinnati.
There's some people who know Sean McVay who think he's done more work on quarterbacks than you might think. Mm. You know, like the Stetson Bennett thing that young man is going through some stuff, right? So they don't even have a timetable when he's going to be around their offseason program. Like, it's going to be hard to bank on that. Like, is this Matt Stafford's last role? I mean, it might be. You know, like, he's been through a lot, man. He took a beating in Detroit. Like, his body is way older than his age. His wife, right, had a tremendous health scare. This is a guy who, like, is he going to be a Super Bowl MVP again? Like, what are the odds of that happening? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Pretty good chance, like, the pinnacle of his career happened. So, if you think six are going and next year's doesn't look as good, I don't know, man. Like, if Penix gets by the Raiders, and I don't think he will, but like if he does, you know what I mean? Is Sean McVay gonna say, wait a minute? I've already done some internal calculus, right? Like, Donald left. I think my quarterback might leave in a year. If I am sticking around, you know what I mean? Like, if I am trying to make another Lombardi push before I turn 45, and maybe that's when I shut it down for a while, then like I need a quarterback. You know, like, I need a quarterback. So I just think no one's really talking about it. And I think it could be a moot point because I think four are going in the top four. And I think Sean Payton's taking one. And I think the Raiders really want to take one. Like, we know I think the Vikings are moving up to take one if they can. So it might be a moot point. But if it's not, boy, I wouldn't flinch at all if he did it. Or Seattle. Like, there's two teams in that division that I think are way more in the quarterback market than is being written about, than is being projected in Mock Draft Nation. So, aside from that, I think he knows what he can do offensively, right, to make things happen. And they find value in offensive players all over the draft. So, front seven, you know, like, I think it would come back to front seven. You know, can we we want to continue to be in a position where we can generate pass rush with four. You know, if we can do that, it makes our lives a whole hell of a lot easier. Again, is this the best draft to be trying to force that? No, it's not. And look, like, even if the way they identify wide receivers, like, if he has a grade on somebody and it just stands out to them, and Cooper Kupp, we know what his body's been through, right? And last year he battled back and was better in the second half. But, like, is he a full season guy now or is he a 12-game guy? I mean, because they have certain body types that they know fit their offense so incredibly well, even that wouldn't shock me.
You talk about draft grades. Nobody thought Puka Nacua was going to do what he did last year. Mm-mm. And he was a fifth-round pick. So, to your point, The vision to see the talent and how you want to use them, especially on the offensive side, I don't know if there's anybody better than Sean McVay.
And remember, they don't really use a tight end. So, right. Like, there's a, like, oh, how would you get all those guys on the field? Well, DeMarcus Robinson becomes the four.
Yep.
Like, sometimes Cup's the joker tight end. Sometimes Nacua's the joker tight end. Like, this might be a kid who they see there who's more of like a Zay Flowers guy. And they're like, okay, we want that body. We want the short, twitched up, you know what I mean, guy who can beat you short, deep, intermediate. Like, there might be something that he sees there that he's just like, I got to get this guy now.
Yeah, it's a great point. Jason Lock on four, Carl Dukes. We're going to come back. We'll talk about what the Jags need as they try to get Trevor Lawrence all the weapons that he needs, but they also need to protect him. We'll get into the Steelers and Eagles and a quarterback conversation you don't want to miss. Coming up on In the Huddle.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Back on In the Huddle, Jason Lock on four, Carl Dukes. All right, we're talking about draft needs. The first night of the draft, we know it's huge. It's an event. The NFL does an amazing job of it. Friday, by the way, the 26th, the day after the draft, we'll be back talking to you about what went down. Brian Baldinger will be a part of that as well. Looking forward to it. And listen, we always say it's the best reality TV on. Let's talk about the Jags. The Jags, by the way, are picking 17th. So we talked about the Bengals at 18. We talked about the Rams at 19. We're going to get to the Steelers and the Eagles here in just a second, who pick 20 and 22nd, respectively, in the first round. Jason, the Jags. Trevor Lawrence needs to, in my opinion, take the next step, right? He's shown flashes, but if I'm Doug Peterson and I'm looking at my team right now, what do I need to go get to help my quarterback be successful?
Well, I think with this first pick, they probably, like, I'm just trying to think about, like, how Trent Baalke might see it. And look, I'm not sure that Trent Baalke has that much jam there right now. Yep. It might be Doug Peterson who's got the owner's ear more than anybody else. But Baalke's going to, you know, have his staff writing up the reports on these guys. Baalke's going to be able to influence how that board is stacked. Now, again, whether Peterson and the owner come in and move it around, so be it. But I'm sure he's going to look for pass rush. I just don't know that he's going to look at this group and be like,
blown away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and he's reached in the past and it hasn't always worked out in Jacksonville and San Francisco. So if that is where he is, like, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to strike out there. Then, like, you know, Cam Robinson's missed a lot of football the last couple of years. Like, where is he in his career arc? Is he really, you know, is he going to make it? Like, is he going to be one of those starting tackles come playoff time? I know they've done some things to throw some money at the offensive line, but, like, even like Brandon Scherff, like, he's way closer to the end than the beginning, and there is going to be a lot of value again in offensive line. It's not super sexy, but it is pretty safe. And, like, even looking at them in some of the gambling markets, like, I'm seeing plus 475, plus 550 on the Jags to take an offensive lineman. And I'm like, I don't know. Again, with where they are, like, I was talking to one personnel evaluator last night, and he's like 13 to 17, like, could end up being a bit of a no man's land. Like, if you're chasing something that's not there, like, if you're really chasing, like, pass rush, and it's not there, like, do you just default to O-line? And we see, you know, six offensive linemen taken in the teens. You know, you'll have a couple that go in the top 10, but then, you know, really, do they get wiped out before you get to 20? Or certainly, you know, 22, 24. Like, it's relatively safe, especially if you've got a kid who's versatile. Maybe he starts inside or you can kick him outside later. I mean, I think all things being equal, offensive line, defensive line. But I wouldn't rule out offensive line with them. I would. Like, some people aren't looking at it as, like, the immediate sort of need, but I think it might be the best fit.
What do you think, you know, they lost, obviously, Calvin Ridley to the Titans. And, you know, they've got Christian Kirk. They've got, I think, Gabe Davis is there.
Yeah.
Do you go wide receiver, maybe a bigger guy?
Zay Jones? I mean, yeah. I don't, because Ingram is really a wide receiver too. You know what I mean? Like, is he really a tight end? Like, he's – so, I don't know. Like, they kind of threw everything at that last year, right, including Calvin Ridley. It didn't work because the offense kind of broke down. Like, they didn't run the ball well. The offensive line wasn't great. You know, the quarterback was banged up early in the year. I don't think he was ever really healthy. Yeah. So, I don't know, man. Like, I kind of feel like they went that route. It didn't work. There's way more depth, I think, at wide receiver than some other positions. I don't know that they have to do that right there. You know, I think they got plenty of guys who can catch the ball, including, you know, a couple of running backs. I have to think Trent Baalke is just like
trenches. Yeah. Well, I'll say this. I do think for Trevor Lawrence, and it's not going to all be on him, to your point about the way the defense, you know, played and some of those guys being injured. But I do think this is a huge year for Trevor Lawrence, and everybody's looking at him just kind of elevate. And part of the issue was, you know, they blew that last game of the season, Jason, where they needed a dub, and you felt like that was a game where Trevor Lawrence just puts the team on his back, right? I'm going to make the plays necessary, and he didn't. But I do agree that I do not think he was completely healthy. And I even think Doug Peterson talked about it at the combine, where he was like, look, you know, my guy was banged up, and we were trying to do some things that we were trying to protect him, you know, from getting even more injured. So we're going to see. The Jags are an interesting team to me, though, as I watch this draft play out. They, again, are picking 17th. Let's talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers. New offensive coordinator, former Falcons coach, Arthur Smith, now is running that offense. And you go, all right, Steelers, they got a few needs. Where does Mike Tomlin go in this particular draft when you say, what is the number one potential need for the Pittsburgh Steelers? We've been talking a lot about offensive line. Yeah. Is it offensive line for the Steelers?
It very well could be. I would say, they've drafted a lot of corners over the years. They've never had the depth at corner they felt like they should have. If there's a corner who they think is close to best of breed, who stands out to them above some of these other position groups, it wouldn't shock me. That's another one. You look at the betting markets, plus 550. I think I played it out to draft a corner. Like, man, I don't know. It's kind of in their DNA to draft corners. I think there's a piece of information we don't have yet, which is, do they trade for a wide receiver before the draft? It would not surprise me if they did that tomorrow, if they did it the Wednesday before the draft, if they did it while they were on the clock, if they did it in the run-up to the draft that Thursday. I know that they're trying to make something happen there. They've done an incredible job drafting wide receivers. So if they don't get a veteran plug-and-play guy, then they also might think, hey, we're so good at it, we can do that day too. And you just lean into the offensive line, which they've been trying to rebuild since, you know, Ben's third to last year in the league, right? Since Pouncey started hitting the wall, since DeCastro started spending more time on the injured list. So, the chalky thing and the obvious thing is O-line. But again, do they do anything at wide receiver? And if not, is there somebody in that first group of four or five receivers who they think could be the best in that draft and maybe he's the third one taken? I wouldn't discount that, depending on what they do in the trade market. And then I just feel like they've been trying to rebuild their sec. Like, Patrick Peterson played a lot of football for them last year. Like, I don't know that that was the plan, but it happened, right? Like, you know, I feel like when they get into their nickel and dime packages, there's been some soft spots there. So I wouldn't discount them taking a DB.
You know, it's rare when we talk about the Steelers making a mistake, but Kenny Pickett was, right? We now can say that, right? That was a mistake.
Yeah. I mean, look, you take a kid that high, he's the only quarterback taken in the first round in that draft. You're certainly thinking he's going to be there for more than 2 years. But I also applaud them on being incredibly proactive about this, right?
And not waiting
till they're at a point, how rock bottom it hit with Mac Jones, how rock bottom the Trey Lance thing never even got off the ground, right? Like, they did it at a time where the market worked in their favor in terms of supply and demand. We get a Russell Wilson and a Justin Fields for nothing and get a little something for Kenny Pickett on the back end. Like, that's not bad. Like, I, again, there's worse circumstances under which you could bite the bullet.
They need right tackle help, specifically, as you mentioned. I think 10 of the top 63 players are offensive linemen or at least tackles in this draft. They could find a guy certainly at 20, and that is if they do not move up to go get one. So they're in a really good position, and they have two third-round picks. So a first, a second, two-thirds, a fourth, and two-sixths. obviously, we'll see what happens with those six-round picks. Maybe you make a move there and you don't need all that. But the Steelers, the thing about the Steelers, and Jason, we'll talk plenty about this when we get back to the season. It's more than just making the playoffs, right? They got to win in the playoffs. I mean, it's great. Tomlin has been getting there, and we love him. Mike T's great. But, like, that's kind of what they're saying in Pittsburgh is, look, we love the fact that we're in, but we got to start winning in these playoffs when we get in there.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's take a look at the Eagles. The Philadelphia Eagles have maybe drafted better than any team in the NFL, specifically over the last 5 years. They have a first, 22 overall, a second, another second at 53, a fourth, two fifths. Check that. Three fifth rounders and a sixth. What does Howie do in this particular draft, looking at the Eagles and saying, all right, look, how do we get back to the Super Bowl? Everybody thought they would. This year, it didn't happen. What are the needs, position needs, Jason, in your opinion, that they need to go into this draft, specifically in the first round?
I think it's front seven. You know, that defense sort of rotted from, like, the inside out. Like, it started falling apart, right? We're not getting as much pass rush. Fletcher Cox is at the end, you know, still kind of figuring out the rotation with some of their young D tackles, especially when they got a little banged up there. They couldn't stop the run, and then it just seemed like it spread to the second level. It spread to the third level. They've got a lot of money and a lot of assets invested in the offense. Look, even offensive line with them, like, wouldn't totally shock me. You know, Lane Johnson, we're now 10-plus years in. Like, guys will get hurt. It's not just about your five offensive linemen, right? It's about your eight or nine offensive linemen. Like, right. They took Landon Dickerson higher than some people would. Oh, he's a medical reject, this, that. Nah, it's worked out pretty good. Like, so I would never rule out, you know, Howie Roseman came of age there when Andy Reid and Joe Banner were running that team. And it was, we build our teams from the inside out. I mean, that was drilled into his head. You know, we can never have enough offensive line depth, right? You had Juan Castillo, who was very powerful in the building, coaching the offensive line, you know, banging the table for certain people. So, you know, I think that's always in the back of Howie's mind. And again, this is a great draft to do something like that. But I think that, you know, they've been drafting a lot of guys in the front seven. They have to keep doing it. They got to the Super Bowl in no small degree and came damn close to winning the Super Bowl because of that pass rush. And I know they're still high on some of the Georgia kids. Like, they feel like some of the answers are within. They dropped off their play. All levels of defense in the second half of the season really kind of collapsed. But again, I think the rot kind of started from the inside out, and that's where I think their draft capital is going.
What's interesting about the Eagles, to your point, you know, N'Kobe Dean, some of these guys we've talked about, all the Georgia players they've got. The Kelce retirement, though, like, the center position, how big of a deal is that? I mean, I don't want to discount it. You're right. I think they made Dickerson the highest paid guard in the league. You know, they're still pretty much intact. But are you concerned about that center situation?
I think Dickerson could do that job if they really needed him to.
Okay.
I personally wouldn't be shocked if the board fell a certain way that they took an offensive lineman. Like, it would not surprise me, you know, and they're willing to make moves in the trade market. Like, they're willing to do some things a little bit creative. It may just make sense. It may just make sense for them to address that then and, you know, see what you can do after the draft via trade. See who's still out on the street to maybe help you plug, you know, like, do they turn to somebody like Emmanuel Ogba, you know what I mean, and sign him 2 days after the draft if they don't, you know, lean into front seven in the first round? I'm sure they have contingencies.
They will. They definitely will. At 22, currently is where the Eagles are picking. We're going to come back. When we do, we're going to talk about how many quarterbacks are going in the top 10. Stay right there. It's In the Huddle. Carl Dukes along with Jason Lock on four. Jason, I know you've been writing about this. I know you've been talking to a lot of folks about all these quarterbacks. I have said probably for 4 weeks now, I think four go in the top 15. The guy that has made the most movement has been J.J. McCarthy, right? He's gone from, okay, he's a decent prospect. We like him. He's a champion in college, too. Harbaugh pumping his guy and saying he's the best quarterback in this draft. Now, we know he's not. But that doesn't mean that teams don't like him. And I also think there's something going on with Drake May where teams are maybe falling away or falling back from what they thought about him. And maybe McCarthy slides in there and he becomes the third or fourth quarterback taken. The Penix situation is interesting. He ran the 40. I thought he wasn't as fast as he ran. And so he's not a guy that looks to run, but that was impressive. And I thought he had a good pro day. And then you look at Bo Nix. And again, I've just never been sold. That's me. But we're going to see. Maybe a team is.
Yep.
Tell me what you're thinking about how many go in the top 10.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I don't think anything's changed. And I was writing about this group in November. And the guys I trust in the league are like six are going in the first round. And the
six?
Kid at Michigan, they were telling me that in November. And I still believe it. And I think six are going in the first half of the first round. Or certainly within the first 18 to 20 picks. And they were telling me McCarthy is no worse. He's no worse than the fourth. And he might be the second off the board. And again, this is in November. You can go Google it. It's, you go find the articles in the Washington Post. And I double back with a lot of these people at the end of the NFL season and then have talked to them as these pro days and as these top 30 visits and these kids are spending time with owners and getting sort of the scuttlebutt on how that stuff's going. And like, yeah, I think they're going 1, 2, 3, 4. And I'm not convinced that New England's taking one. I could see New England trading back. Certainly Arizona at 4 has been open for business for a trade, and I'd be stunned if they actually pick at 4. I could see the Giants moving up from 6 to 3 or 4 to get one. Minnesota, absolutely. You mentioned Drake May. He's not everybody's cup of tea. There's some people wondering how ready he is to lead a huddle of men, to lead a huddle of, you know, $30 million wide receivers, and can he come in and command that right away? Probably not. But Minnesota, you know, they've got Josh McCown on the staff who coached him in high school. Like, Minnesota's already made these moves to telegraph, like, we're trying to get a quarterback. And I think Minnesota's a team that could move up to 3 or 4. And if it goes Caleb Williams 1, I think right now, if you put a gun to my head, I'd say Washington takes McCarthy.
Okay.
We can get into that more if you want. And yes. Then I think at 3 is a trade, and it might be the Giants trading up, you know, to get whoever they think QB3 is. It could be the Vikings going up to get May right then or there. But certainly I don't think Daniels gets past 4 through trade or otherwise. That could be the Raiders coming up to 4 to get Daniels. Wouldn't shock me at all. And then after that, I've been hearing that Sean Payton has a thing for Bo Nix since, again, before Thanksgiving. Like, he doesn't have much draft capital. He's got to get a quarterback. Like, they're playing football games this year. He's got to get a quarterback. So, like, could he get cute and, you know, take Bowers with his pick and try to trade back into the first round and get a quarterback? Like, he could. But, like, if you're Sean Payton and you're a quarterback guy and you like this kid, like, is Sean Payton going to be on the golf course? Like, damn, I really shouldn't have taken him at 12. Although, like, is he going to, like, think, well, I probably could have. Maybe I could have got him at 24. Or is he just happy to have a quarterback? Like, I think he's just happy to have a quarterback. And I think those owners are going to be happy to have a quarterback who's not making anything close to the kind of money the other guy was making. So, like, is that too high for him? I mean, I don't know. If he plays there 12 years and wins some playoff games, I don't think it is. Like, if you squint hard enough and you convince yourself there's Drew Brees in there, like, is 12 too high to take him? Like, who's going to tell Sean Payton? No. So, I that to me is the match. And I hear that the Raiders are, like, pretty eager to draft one of these kids. And I there's obvious ties to Antonio Pierce to the ASU program, and I know they love Jaden Daniels. Might be too much of a move. The price might be too steep. If it is, I think Penix falls right to them. If not them, you know, the Seattle Seahawks know Penix really well. He practices right down the road. Like, they told you the Geno thing is year to year. Like,
The guy who wanted Geno the most isn't there anymore. The 70-year-old head coach. Like, they're clearly building for the long term with their new head coach who's a baby. Like, I mean, I've asked five people who I trust who don't have a dog in the fight, who aren't in all likelihood drafting a quarterback. Is there anything in your medical evaluation of Michael Penix that would prevent you from taking him in the first round? And nobody has said there is. Like, it's out there in the ether, and, like, he's had some surgeries. A lot of these kids have had surgeries. But, like, I haven't heard anybody who I trust tell me, oh, no, we couldn't draft him, and, you know, at 18 or whatever. I no one's told me that. So I just think the productivity's there. The maturity is there. The athleticism is there, as you mentioned, pro day. And again, McCarthy, a GM who's not drafted a quarterback, like, told me that Michigan pro day, and he's not somebody who in general would gush about anybody's pro day. Like, he was like, dude, my job, like, I wasn't there for him. I didn't think I would spend that much time watching him. He's like, dude, it was elite. He's like, I know this sounds stupid to say it was an elite pro day, but he's like, my jaw was like he blew people away. There's a lot of people who've told me, I'm like, who's your comp for McCarthy? Brock Purdy. And I'm looking at the GM in Washington who was in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Who I was told was one of the biggest Trey Lance people, right? And that model blew up in his face, right? I also think Kyle Shanahan, when he got Trey Lance, I kind of buy that the guy he really wanted was Mac Jones. Like, so I'm looking at who Kyle Shanahan's, like, won with, right? Or what's worked out for him. The RG3 thing worked for a second. It blew up. Kirk Cousins was the guy who saved the day. Like, you're looking at Cousins. You're looking at Matt Ryan. Like, I'm looking at Brock Purdy. And I'm saying J.J. McCarthy. And that's the San Francisco model that they brought in. Like, a smart processor, a brilliant kid, a brilliant point guard. You know what I mean? A smart football savant facilitator. Like, I don't know that they need Daniels. You know what I mean? Like, I just think all things being equal. And also people are, like, looking at Kingsbury. Kingsbury's there by default. Nobody wanted Cliff Kingsbury in that building. They've been scrambling to get an offensive coordinator. Like, the idea that Cliff Kingsbury's a big swing and you know what? There, well, you know the kind of quarterbacks. I'm like, shut up. It's Dan Quinn. It's the GM. Like, you know, do you think Dan Quinn, a defensive-minded guy, wants a boomer bust, like, you know, tremendous play or pick six? Like, and I don't think that's what Daniels is, but, like, if you're going to, like, slot these kids into, like, overarching stereotypes, like, if you're looking for consistency, if you're a defensive-minded head coach and you're looking for the point guard model, and this kid, if we don't take him, New England probably will at 3 if they stay there, or somebody's taking him in the top 5. Again, what's the difference whether you took him 2, 3, 4, or 5? I have become convinced that McCarthy's a real good fit for Washington.
It's interesting. I've been saying that he's moving up. Obviously, we're having the same conversations with people, and people don't want to believe it because they're so caught up, Jason, in the, I saw him in college and he didn't throw enough. And what people don't realize is it's how guys translate to the NFL. You know, sometimes we've seen guys throw for 8 million yards in college and they don't do diddly squat in the NFL. So I think more than anything, the reason why I would draft him, he played in a pro system. He played for a pro coach.
Yep.
Okay? And he was allowed to change plays at the line of scrimmage at Michigan. Most of these guys are in the shotgun, and they're looking over to the side.
Holding up a sign.
That's right. And they're making hand signals and holding up Beyonce's face. Okay? That is not what JJ did. Right. And I don't think a lot of football people who are not in our position, they don't, the average fan doesn't see that or realize what he was doing at Michigan. And then, let's be honest, they played to their strengths. The reason why Georgia won back-to-back national championships is because they had the best damn offensive line and the best defensive line in college football. The reason why Michigan won is because they had the best offensive line and the best defensive line in college football. Play to your strengths. I don't think that has anything or should not take away from what JJ can be.
Did you ever hear that kid complain? Like, did you ever hear reports from Mick, you know, JJ McCarthy's camp not happy about how much they're running the ball, or you know what I mean? Or McCarthy's dad, you know, tweeted, "Don't you know you have a top five quarterback?" Like, there was none of that. I got news for you. When he comes into the league, he's not coming in as a superstar. He's coming in as a guy who's going to defer to other people. He's going to have to get in where he fits in. He's going to have to subjugate his ego. Like, you can make the case. He already did that. Like, if he was in some other program, yeah, the numbers would have been gaudier. It would have looked sexier. But he rolled with, like, he wanted, why? Because he wanted to win. I'm like, that's it. Convinced the kid's going to be great at the NFL level. Like, I have no dog in this fight. I have no idea. Personally, I'm a Daniels guy. But, like, how they think and their asses are on the line and their decisions are going to be, you know, scrutinized all through the way, there is a safe path you can convince yourself in for this kid's career, right, that is much more projectable than some of the others. Now, again, that's, I'm talking about a narrow, safe path, and his is probably wider than some others. He can't get out. He can't get out here or out there. Like, that's not happening. Like, but can he be a winning NFL quarterback?
Yeah,
there's going to be a lot of reasons to convince yourself that it can't. So, again, I'm not saying that's who I would take it to.
No, no, I hear you.
But I would not be surprised at all, if he's two.
Yeah, and you've been writing about this, and again, as we count down to the draft, if you're wavering any of these teams with these quarterbacks, and again, you think, tell me again, six in the first.
18.
All right. If you're wavering, you better know and have conviction about these picks. And that's the thing. All these guys talk about, this is who we wanted. Last year we laughed at the Lions going after a running back in the first round. You got to have conviction on this is the guy, and you better know how you're going to use him and what you can expect from him. Jason, great stuff, man. As always, we are going to continue to talk about the draft and countdown. Talk about team needs. We'll get into the top 10. Listen, that's what everybody's wondering. And how many teams move up? Jason talked about it. How many teams make that move? Raiders, Broncos, Vikings? I mean, we could see a lot of movement on draft night. But we have to assume right now that this is what it's going to be. So we're just going in kind of in order, and we'll continue that process as we will have another episode coming up next week. Two episodes, then we'll get into the draft stuff. And then, of course, we'll be back after the draft when it's all said and done, as teams will either do two things, guys. They'll improve or they'll get worse. That's all that happens. Jason, great stuff, man. And we will talk to you soon, buddy.
Thanks, brother.
Thank you guys for being here. It's In the Huddle. Subscribe, like us, and watch us on YouTube. Have a great day, everybody.
2400 Sports is an Odyssey company.